order. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and just get started, members. There's only, just for the matter of those of you who are here tonight, you know, we are looking at Article 1 in the Sunset Bill, House File 2555, for the record. So what we are looking at is some changes in dates in Article 1. And I have a... Mike, I gave you, and I give to you Joyce as well, but I do have some extras here. Yeah, you've got that?
Yeah.
Joyce, I see you don't. This is that work schedule. And Terry, I think I gave it to you, but I have another one.
Yeah.
And why don't you put this down for Senator Daley and Senator Perry. All right. And Senator Perry. Yep. Representative Banyan, do you want to have a copy of this?
So
you
I do don't want to.
Yeah, we'll get that to you. And then what is the handout at the end of the table, Joe?
Those are the old version of Article 1, which I think is sitting in front of you there.
Right, and the new
and the
possible.
New one.
And then the work.
The new
work schedule.
Oh, and you got the work schedule.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Everybody has that at the table.
All right. The work schedule, folks, might be, this is the work schedule. It's a nice table put together that basically takes the changes in Article 1 and just puts them for you in the schedule, because we thought it would be easier to see that than what you see. Senator Perry, welcome. We have a spot for you down here. We're just going over materials to make sure everybody has their materials. Senator Perry, in front of you, there is the old Article 1, the new Article 1, that's all we're working on, because the only thing that the Senate changed was the dates for the sunset review. So we have the old and the new in front of you also. There should be a work schedule that just is taking from statute the table and taking what the Senate had changed, except for instead of 2013, doing 2014 for only the councils of color. There are those four, and all the other health boards, Capital Architecture Board, Amateur Sports Commission, and so on, Council on Disability, go to 2018. So it's keeping the Senate date of 2018, doing a few changes around, but in light of the discussions we've had during the day, this is language that would be consistent with that. So that is what you have in front of you. We do have a couple folks that do want to testify. Hector Garcia with the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. We do have you on the list, Hector, if you still want to do that.
Yes.
But I would say while I want to get something out on the just to get the changes that are here. So it's really a pretty straightforward change. Out of the boards. And again, the members of the conference committee have gotten this language ahead of time. Was it Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. That's okay, thanks. Was it posted with the notice for the conference committee, the amendment?
I did not get the posting. I did not post the amendment.
Okay. All right. It was distributed and discussions had with many as well. Pardon?
I'll get it up online.
Yeah. Okay. For that particular Article 1 at this time, those are the issues. And then, Senator Bonhoff, do you want to bring up the subject that was most recently brought up to us on the Combat of Sports Commission?
Yep. When we passed legislation to move the combative sports to the Department of, or to DEED, Dolly, thank you. Okay. It's been a long day. There are costs associated with that because the combative sports is projected to run a deficit this year and into the next that's pretty significant. And so we're going to need to find a way to deal with that if we're going to move the combative sports into Dolly, because Dolly does not have the budget to just absorb those losses. And so I have spoke with Mr. Rakowski, who's here, about, and I have spoken to the administration, and really the only tool that we have at this time is to allow, because this is, they do have fees just like the other boards and commissions where they're, they generate fees to cover their costs. They're going to have to increase their fees to cover their costs because that's the only tool they have. So, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you very much. I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry. And as of 30 minutes ago, I want to just commend Senate staff. I'm sure if I were to work with the House staff, they would have been just as prompt and efficient. We were able to look at session law from last year, and I believe the Senate Council for Labor and Industry is working on an amendment right now to make the necessary changes to the fee schedule.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bonner. Madam Chair, Mr. Rakowski, we had discussed, Representative Kiffmeyer and myself, that we wouldn't necessarily need to identify exactly what the fees would go to. I don't know what council's thinking, but we wondered if you couldn't just have language that would authorize them to raise their fees to cover the costs.
I'll defer to Kevin. The fiscal analyst has the information.
Senate Counsel Carlin, who was here the other night, is down working on the amendment. And in statute, all of the fees are laid out with the fee increase or what they're paying for the fees, depending on what type of license it is. So I think the amendment that she's working on is to increase those license fees then to bring in additional revenue.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Mr. Rakowski, you and I had also talked that we expected the combative sports to reduce some of their expenses, and so that it probably their fees would not be increased to wholly cover their projected deficit. Is that the direction you gave Senate Council?
What we did is we, and this all happened this afternoon when our fiscal folks at our department realized that the effective date would be fiscal year 2012. And the estimated deficit is about $120,000 for the next fiscal year. So the amendment will reflect covering those costs, Madam Chair. So I think we're good.
You think you're good for fiscal year 13?
That is correct.
Okay. So then do we need to deal with this at this time then?
I would appreciate very much if you would, because it takes effect July 1st.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What's created, what happened from yesterday to today that created the need for such a rapid fee increase?
Senator Perry, the two bills, the effective dates were a year apart, and the conference committee decided to go with this July 1st. So it created that deficit in this biennium. If we would have went out a year, we could have dealt with it next year when we did the budget process.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Perry.
I don't believe I still got my answer. What changed that created
the effective date, Senator Perry?
So what you're explaining to me is the same thing as when we ended the last biennium on June 30th, we needed $9 billion to run the state. In that one period of time, I'm not following you here. Obviously, something changed. Can't be just an effective date, in my mind, that changed that created this deficit all of a sudden.
Well, I would say, Mr. Rakowski, that as I understand it, the Combative Sports Commission held an event which gave them a jump in revenues, and that this this deficit, you might say, they've been spending money beyond their revenues, but they've been using the event money that gave them a surplus, you might say, and so they've been living beyond their fee revenues, for a few years and using this money that is in the account that mm-hmm. was from a particular event to get through. So in other words, instead of reducing expenses, they just kept their expenses at the same level and then were using that previous revenue to help fill the hole. Senator Perry, that's
thank
my
you.
Understanding. Doesn't
thank
make
you.
It, well, I just wanted you to have.
Well, I appreciate that, Madam Chair, and that seems to be the problem with government today in many things. They forget that there isn't an open faucet here, and they forget that they can't keep going back to the till and raising fees. It's no different than raising taxes. You know, a prudent business person would have made the cuts when they were necessary to make the cuts. That didn't happen. That didn't happen. And now they're coming back here, and they expect us to allow them just to randomly raise their fees because they didn't do the prudent thing. And we've had discussions, and this is the issue I have with many of the boards and advisory councils. They haven't done, because there has been no oversight, in my mind.
And the difference, as I understand it, is that if it's put out a year, from the way I see this, this really doesn't change. If you put out a year, then Dolly has next session to come back and deal with the money. And if and that means that the Combat of Sports Commission, if they're allowed to go another year independently, they're going to go in debt. Mm-hmm. What's amazing here to me is that the Combat of Sports Commission knew this, that they, on the 2013 date before, and it just makes me wonder, was the thought that, well, we'll just go in debt and whatever to fix it, if it wouldn't have been for moving it up a year with Dolly. My question is, it time to say to the Combat of Sports Commission, these are your fees, these are your revenues, and you need to cut back to meet that revenue. This is your revenue, and you need to cut back your expenses to meet your revenue. I mean, these are two ways you can go, but the other option is for them to take their fee revenue and do their work within those that revenue. Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, when we heard the combative sports as they came before us, they were going to be in debt, and we thought they did not show proper fiscal management, and we had a couple choices of how to deal with that. Do we just say you're gone entirely, or do we say you're providing something that seems to be what Minnesotans want? And so we're going to put you in a structure where we can provide oversight and we can get your finances under control. And that's what we chose to do. So when the bill went forward as 2013 as to avoid the fiscal cost, that to me was irresponsible of us if we let that happen, because then we're saying these people cannot manage their finances, but we don't want the burden, so we'll just let them out there to mismanage their finances for an extra year. And I don't want to do that. If we think that they belong with more oversight, we need to provide it. Perhaps a middle ground here is to not let them, to change that amendment, which is what I had hoped we would do, and not cover the whole 120, to say they need to cut back. And yeah. So I think they probably should have come before. I remember asking them, yes, what is your plan? You're in the red. And they literally did, and you know, and this is not to be disparaging, but the truth is they looked at us and said, we have no plan. Mm-hmm. And I said, why are you here before us without a plan? And so perhaps now the compromise is to say, no, they can't raise their fees all the way. But, again, they should have brought forward a plan to raise their fees, because this is a marketplace sport. You know, if you can't make money, don't do it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so – but don't do it to that extent. Say, let them go, you know, raise it to 90 or –
The problem I have, there are other bills that have come forward with fee increases, and they have not gone well. So I think it's going to be a very difficult situation to come back from this bill.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess this begs the question, what happens, what will be the consequences if we just sunsetted them, let them go away? They're still going to, I mean, my understanding is the current law is that they continue to operate through next year, piling up additional deficits with no oversight, and then they get dumped into whatever, wherever they get dumped. And so we're not, again, we're still not solving the problem because they'll continue on. So I guess that's, maybe that's more a rhetorical question than a question. So I guess I think what we need to do is get it solved now and get it taken care of. And if we have to raise the fees so that they're covering their costs, because they've already been operating in a deficit, we need to do that. But they also need to get their act together and get their finances, financial situation straightened up and their expenses straightened up.
Well, one of thank you, Representative Nelson. One of the issues that I find with them is what is, you know, generally speaking, they arrange for people to go and supervise their work. And the people who get supervised pay that fee for that. What are the expenses back at the home office that they need money for? In other words, what's the administrative overhead, Mr. Rakowski?
I have no idea. The reason this is coming to us is because 4 years ago, the Ledoux, Scott and Carol, were running the commission literally out of their home, and the legislative, if you've heard this, stop me, but I'm giving you a little background. Have you heard this? They were running it out of their home. The legislative auditor said, this is, you know, a state boxing commission. You can't run this out of, you can't be paying people with your credit cards. They were, so they put them at our department temporarily. We provided them with legal and legislative assistance during the 2008 session to create the statute, which is before you, the Combative Sports Commission. After that, they were housed at the, because of Scott's illness, I know all of you probably know he died of ALS last summer. They were housed at the Amateur Sports Commission. And I don't know what kind of oversight they've had for the last 3 years. It's obvious they have, frankly, haven't had very much. That's why we're in the situation we're in. The commissioner, you don't have a lot of options before you, committee members. Our department, for those of you not familiar, Mike Nelson, Representative Nelson, is very familiar. The two main funds we have are workers' compensation, that runs our workers' compensation division, and our construction code and licensing division, which is a fee for service. You know, we license and regulate about 130,000 individuals and businesses. So we have less than $1 million in our department for the labor standards unit, which investigates or enforces the Fair Labor Standards Act, which we get maybe $770,000 in general fund. It's less than 1% of our budget. So general fund isn't an option either.
Well, Mr. Rakowski, what I hear you saying, though, then, is that the issue for Dolly is not wanting to take on a liability.
Exactly.
Okay. The issue that we are wrestling here with is a little different, and that is if we went back to, we could either just simply allow them to sunset, and then they have their $60,000 to do their work and let them figure that out. What I'm concerned about is rewarding bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, we're picking up their responsibilities, their expense of their monkey, and dealing with all of this. And if we just simply did a straight-out sunset, then they would have their $60,000 to deal with their issues. Are they able to go in debt? I mean, are they truly able to incur expenditures when the checkbook is empty?
I'm not in a position to answer that, Madam Chair.
Is there anybody here in legal counsel then that can answer that question? Mr. Shepard, sorry, I'm going to put you on the spot a bit.
Sure. Against state law, you can only pay money out of the state treasury for the purpose for which it's appropriated. And if they didn't have any money, I don't think it's legal for them to incur an indebtedness in excess of the appropriation. So I don't believe the Commissioner of Management and Budget would be able to allot money to them or to approve an expenditure unless somebody transferred them some money somehow.
Mr. Shepard, do they currently have a special revenue fund then that they write checks from, or are they appropriated money?
Madam Chair, Ms.
Because literally, if they just run out of money, they...
Ms. Kavanaugh is showing me that in the current law, there is a commission account in the special revenue fund from which the money is annually appropriated. But if there's no money in that account, I don't know if there's anyone from management budget here that would know if they're allowed to transfer money from other accounts in the special revenue fund. I don't know that.
I don't believe so.
Yes, you certainly can. Representative Heppen.
I'm trying to understand the financial impact and what Dolly's looking for. And I guess I'm relating it to the staff that they currently have. How much is Dolly saying you need to be able to, well, to overlook this? And is that because we're transferring staff over? And is there a way to get this done with less staff? And can you just tell me what the, I'm confused at what the dollar amount is and what the cost is.
The dollar amount does, and I'd like Senate Counsel to help me out here, I think. Right now, the bill in front of you, the language in front of you, would transfer the two positions to our department.
That is in the rest of the bill, I think in Article 2, possibly?
Article 3.
What we did, Senator Bonhoff, is we transferred all their employees.
Right.
If we didn't require that, mm-hmm. and if, you know, my question for you then is, without transferring those employees then, if you simply had the money that currently was in the special revenue fund appropriated to you, which is already in Article 3, mm-hmm. And you had complete discretion to use those funds just to do the work, would that be more workable? That, because it seems like the reason for the raising of the fees is in order to keep those employees.
Share your opinion on that, Madam Chair.
Maybe the solution might be helpful then, Senator Bonhoff. Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, question for Mr. Rakowski.
One of the primary functions of the Combative Sports Commission is to referee and observe all the fights. By eliminating the staff, would you still be able to make sure there was somebody to referee and observe all those fights? Is one of the staff members the one who goes out and does that?
Mr. Rakowski.
Again, I haven't followed this for about 4 years, but got very familiar with the board members that in the 2008 session, my understanding was the board members were the ones who went out there. And you're still... And when I read the language yesterday, you're simply, not simply, but you're transferring the commission into a board at the department.
Yeah.
And the makeup looks exactly the same. So I'm going to presume many of the individuals who have been involved in this are going to apply for the same position. Mm-hmm. There's the issue of having a doctor at every one of these bouts, but again, there's only been three of them in the last year, according to the commissioner, so I think we could make it work.
You think you could make
we
it work?
We have,
if
for the other, for, we, and Mike Nelson, Representative Nelson knows this, several years ago, we were charged to manage the Board of Electricity, Board of High Pressure Piping, and the Board of Plumbing, and we staff that. And so we have an attorney who worked with the Ledoux and myself 4 years ago, and I've talked to her about this. So I think that's why it's coming to us, is because we're the only ones who had any knowledge of how this worked.
Mr. Rakowski, that is very much the case, and it is very, very helpful, as you can tell. I don't think any other agency would have that kind of institutional knowledge.
We are a licensing and regulatory agency for the most part.
Okay, it seems as though, Ms. Aves, can you find that in Article 3, if we maybe need to just do an amendment there so that, or Mr. Shepherd, so that we don't bring that requirement over? And then, because that seems to be the issue for Dolly here, Mr. Rakowski, okay?
I will tell you that the commissioner, as this has been discussed during this session, when he heard that they might come here and that they were operating in a deficit, he said, I don't know how I'm going to keep these staff with us because we do not have general fund money to pay them. As I said, there's no real alternative. We can't use work comp money to pay salaries for the competitor. Sorry? For the commission, too, I understand.
I'm sorry, what was that, Mr. Shepherd, Mr. Rakowski?
My understanding is there's two full-time FTEs.
Yeah. And I think that might be, at least we give you the authority or the option. There may be, again, some knowledge or value there. But I think right now the language is such that it's a little bit more of a mandated situation.
Yes.
And Senator Bonhoeff, what I'm thinking of is if we just give staff just a few minutes here, if you might be able to come up with a suggested language on how we could make that more optional.
That would be wonderful.
So that you might be able to, it could be part-time, it could be possibly of use to you and somewhere else in Dolly, that, you know, sometimes you have employees who do more than one thing, and there might be some benefit there. But it seems like we might need to give you more flexibility. And Mr. Shepherd, did you have something?
Just a thought, Madam Chair, and there may be others at the table or in the room that could help out. It's my understanding from Mr. Rakowski, there's two staff currently. The bill as it stands now would transfer both of those staff people to the Department of Labor and Industry. If you did not do that, then the staff would be laid off and have to be paid their severance and unemployment comp costs from the current Combative Sports Commission. And so they would somebody has to pay that money for the unemployment comp and the severance costs to the staff if they aren't there. Once that occurred, then the department would have less ongoing cost. You could have the folks laid off.
If they were laid off,
Mr.
Shepherd.
If they were laid off, if one of them were laid off, or you could transfer them to the department then wouldn't have money to pay them both, so they could lay off one of them or reduce them to part-time. It could work, it could potentially work either way, but there will be some potential severance costs if you downsize.
If there was that. And that's why I think, Mr. Rakowski, that the best thing to do is to give the department as much flexibility, and because I know that in your best interest there may be knowledge there that you would want to retain, but with flexibility, not in the exact same position maybe, but okay. Senator, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought, if I remember right from the discussions we had earlier doing the side-by-sides in the working group, that one of the reasons we were talking about retaining the staff was because they had expertise in running the commission and doing the work of the commission. Are we saying now that they don't need that, and we can, if we lay them off, that there's staff at the Dolly that can take over those functions without dropping the ball as far as what needs to be done? I guess that's my recollection of when we discussed this, and that's why we accepted the Senate language, which was originally to set to transfer those positions over. I think the House language was silent on that, if I remember right.
It was, and I think what we are looking at, Representative Nelson, is making it optional. In other words, instead of a mandate that they have to keep them, more of an optional, and that way we give them time to make that transition and retain that knowledge or that expertise, and we're not right now are pretty heavy-handed in the Senate language at saying that, so we might want to go back to more flexibility, and that might help with our fiscal note then.
And then, Madam Chair, then I guess, and the other question I think in my mind is, what are the positions that, what are we talking about? Is this a clerical position, or is it a supervisory position? What are we talking about in positions, and would they readily transfer over to other positions in Dolly that they could be absorbed, or someplace else in state government that could be absorbed?
Representative Nelson, when I look at it here, I think of it being an optional. It means they may retain them. They may retain them full-time, part-time. But we would allow the department to have that flexibility. Representative Peckham.
I have a clarifying question for Mr. Shepherd. The severance and whatnot, how are they classified as employees that they would get denied at will and how long? I mean, just that kind of took me off guard. I'm surprised that they would be classified. Just clarify that. And
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Shepherd.
The type of costs that would typically be incurred in layoff would be unemployment compensation. And so that, I'm fairly confident without knowing much about these employees that they would be covered by the unemployment compensation system. And then if they had any accrued vacation time, that would be the severance. Potentially some payout for accrued sick leave. It's not like a buyout agreement or anything like that. It's just it would be their vacation that they hadn't used, and perhaps a portion of their sick leave, depending. That proportion would depend how long they'd been employed with the agency.
And Mr. Shepherd, that would be if they had accrued, which we wouldn't know at this point.
Do we know how long the employees have been there?
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, I don't have any information on these particular employees, and I don't know. I don't see anyone that does. So I don't know. Ms. Roberts may have some information.
Madam Chair, I can just tell you from the fiscal note on the House bill for the executive director position, there was a total estimate of $25,000. The severance costs that included maximum unemployment costs of $15,000, and then maximum vacation payout would be approximately $9,650. So that those would be the maximum costs. For that one position, they do not estimate.
Okay, Mr. Rakowski, again, that would be if you laid them off. That's, we are looking at this as a, and sometimes you do look at these things that saying when you have those costs, you sometimes say, well, maybe it'll be worth it better to do that. All right, Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, with regard to the decision of laying off or not laying off, if the commissioner decided prior to or before July 1st and let the commission know of that decision, then wouldn't the state not be responsible and it would definitely have to come from the commissions, or would those liabilities transfer? And perhaps council could.
Would it also not be that in somewhat is immaterial because the money transfers
right.
with that? So
yeah,
I don't know
so
that it would.
Correct.
Thank you. Okay. All right. On the other hand, there would be discretion from the commissioner on those two employees.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the key thing we need to think of here. This does not mean they lay them off. It does not mean also that they have to retain them.
Right.
It does give the commissioner, which was the whole point of our transferring to the commissioner,
exactly,
was to give him that oversight, that accountability, and that. And so we might be wise to give him also the flexibility if we're going to do that.
Absolutely.
All right. Then what is the language that we could maybe use that would give that flexibility? Is it in the House language then, Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, I would suggest two things for your consideration. You may recall on the side-by-side, the House language had provided that there was a sentence that said, Minnesota statutes section 15.039, subdivisions 1 to 6 applies to this transfer.
Right.
The Senate said 15.039, 1 to 7. 7 is the one that references the employees. The when you were meeting informally, you had agreed on the Senate position, so you could go back and refer to section, first refer to section 15.039, subdivision 1 to 6, and second, add a sentence that would state that the Commissioner of Labor and Industry may provide that one or more staff of the Combative Sports Commission transfer to the Department of Labor and Industry. And that if so you could add that sentence, and that would give the commissioner the flexibility to accept one or more of the staff.
Madam Chair.
Hi, Senator Perry.
Thank you very much. I still have issue with the fact, if that's the direction you're thinking you want to go, then I think also it needs to be detailed specifically that no general fund money at all is used. And if that's the case, if we're moving, if the intent is to move them into Dolly, that there should be a percentage of the cost of the office space, the equipment, and everything is within that.
Okay, Mr. Rakowski?
My CFO likes to use the term indirect cost, so I think if you can add that to the amendment, that would cover the office, the use of the office. Because we rent our building, and we would have to figure that out.
Mr. Rakowski, if we give you that kind of flexibility then, does that enable us to use whatever resources are in at this time from revenues or that is in the special revenue fund, all those would go with you and giving you that flexibility that between now and the next legislative session, of course, you have recourse to come back and make a proposal to us?
Madam
that
Chair,
would be okay?
That would be fine. I'm trying to discern here that this is an alternative to any fee increase. Is that what we're talking about? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Could we just maybe have opportunity if you could draft that as a official amendment, including Senator Perry's language and what we've discussed? Do you need a few minutes to do that? And are we able to do that? We have a 12-hour rule, so we're kind of trying to do this yet tonight.
Madam Chair, I think let me try to restate what Senator Perry said to make sure I understood your intent, Senator, correctly, that there would be a sentence that would say no general funds may be used for costs associated with this transfer. And then there would be another sentence that would, as I understand it, that would allow the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to charge the commission account for indirect costs.
At that time, it would be the advisory council
and
account or something like that.
I could. Madam Chair, I would perhaps ask either one of the fiscal staff or Ms. Barando from MMB if that would occur anyway, even if we didn't say that. I think some of the indirect costs do get billed back, but I'm not an expert on that. So if there's anyone that...
To be clear, I think we'd want to, since we're doing this tonight, I think we'd want to be a little more... if we can.
This just occurred to me when we cleaned up our, and Representative Nelson might be able to help me, and Senate Council. 2 years ago, I think we came up with a fee schedule, a four-tiered fee schedule for businesses, individuals, journeymen, and masters. And then if the plumbing board, if a group came forward to the department, like the residential contractors have asked to have an advisory board, then those folks who are licensed in that industry would pay an additional $4 fee on top of their license in order to have a board. And this seems a lot like those other three. This is an authoritative board, correct? So it ought to be treated like the Board of Electricity, the Plumbing, and High Pressure Piping. It shouldn't be treated like that. I'm just throwing that out there.
I think what I would really appreciate.
We could come back next year on that.
Come back next year and then. Because they need help right now.
Right.
This is not.
I don't know how many people are licensed under this sport. I just don't know.
Yes, I need a sport to a call. Okay. All right.
I heard that.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Baca.
One final comment. Senator Perry, when you made your comments about the spigot in government, I just want to say for the record that I've been here now 7 years, and I don't think that in Minnesota that we manage our day-to-day with a spigot that just flows, because I think particularly as I watch our staff and the detail with which we craft our statutes, that we do our very best to make the best possible use of taxpayer dollars. So I didn't want to just let that stay in the record without saying that I'm quite proud of the staff of Minnesota and the work that the legislature does, including you, your work, Senator Perry, and your committee.
Well, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
I would contend that, at least in the Senate, 38 years of control has got us to where we're at right now. And I will continue to say that the lack of oversight by these boards and commissions are a fault of this legislature and not taking action. And the reason that I believed in the Sunset Commission and why it was in Senate File 1047 last year was because I felt they would have some teeth and be able to do the right thing. And what we got set up with is a deadlock, 6-6, and nobody wanting to make the really tough decisions, in my mind. And that's why I supported the Sunset Commission. I thought they could really tackle this, and I've been very supportive of it. But there comes a time when you have to say, just like with this combative sports, knowing the shape they're in and the fact that they're in debt is totally unacceptable. I only blame the legislature for that. That's our responsibility. As chairman, my direction was the Sunset Commission move forward, do the best they can, but ultimately it comes back to us to make the right decision as we move forward.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, Senator Perry, sorry I gave you that opening. I wished we would have just moved on, but continue.
Well, I do think that the things that I've heard is that this is a Sunset Commission that has existed for 6 months. And just think of any other entity that has had 6 months that has done the number of reforms and the work and the effort that we've done. So I really appreciate that, and especially I know that several of the boards and commissions have said they've not had this much attention. Sometimes they wish they didn't have this much attention either. On the other hand, they're actually getting attention, and that is exactly what Senator Perry wanted, was for it to get that attention. But probably like a lot of things, you don't always have the full impact in your first 6 months. So I think we're doing some good things. I think that kind of resolved it. Staff, do you have enough? Thank you, Mr. Rakowski.
Thank you very much.
Do you have enough language there to go with that we could maybe, I noticed, we tried to think maybe we might have a conference committee report that we could sign. We're going to have to probably amend that with this language and redo that. But do you have enough of what you need, and then we can just recess for a while? We will testify. Yes. I'm sorry, I meant after we have. Yes, Mr. Shepherd.
Yes, Madam Chair, what I might suggest is that I will write this. We will write, assuming the conferees adopt this, we will make these changes in a new version of a conference report that the revisor could prepare for you. Mm-hmm. And then you would have the opportunity, of course, before you sign that, to review the language that we would put in.
I just know that the other language, we tried to think ahead and have something written down, but this particular language, we do not. So if we could maybe kind of get that ready, and then we could take testimony from others. Representative Nelson.
So, Madam Chair, just so I have my head around this, we're going in this, I'm looking at the side-by-side from the working group the other night, so we're going back to the House language and then adding the language that Mr. Shepherd has prepared to that House language. I guess the question I have, does that automatically transfer the authority to use the count to them, the special revenue fund to them, or do we have to do language to do that? I just want to get all our dotted and T's crossed.
Ms. Kavanagh? Or somebody else, Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, in the language that you all adopted already, it transferred jurisdiction over the combative sports account in the special revenue fund from the commission to the commissioner. So that was in the side-by-side already. So
that is retained.
That is retained.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Let's go ahead then and have Mr. Garcia. You wanted to have some time to testify here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. I apologize. I've got a bad throat, so hopefully you can hear me.
But please state your name and title.
Certainly. Hector Garcia, Executive Director of the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I suggest that context is like an agenda that defines the outcome. And so it is that context that I would like to address for two reasons. One, to encourage the approval of the language of the House as submitted today to extend one more year the sunset of our council. And in a longer term, that we perhaps evaluate the performance, the return on investment that everybody wants of our council in a broader context. We were created in 1978, approximately 14 years before this stage of globalization started. The game has changed. Globalization is a game changer. The way our council was defined to address the needs of the Latino community has become, in my opinion, anachronistic. And therefore, the return on investment that you rightfully expect will not come about unless we change that context. To become more specific, Nobel Prize winner Joseph Stiglitz, when he was the head economist at the World Bank, pointed out in several books after he left the World Bank that the World Bank was not being very effective in addressing poverty throughout the world for the reason that there was no partnership between the World Bank teams and the people who experienced poverty. I suggest to you that our council can be a vehicle to establish partnership between the legislature, the governor's office, and our community, and that thereby we will be able to produce the return on investment that you expect. The way the relationship and the structure is defined now, it is going to be extremely difficult to have an impact on the disparities. I can assure you that if you make time to sit down with us after, you know, this is all over, and to discuss at length in detail how we can jointly have an impact on the disparities which are affecting dramatically the economy of the state and will continue to do so because of our demographic growth, I think you will see a totally different result in that direction. But that's not the only thing. You will also see the potential to tap into untapped resources. In the current context, and I've been listening to the dialogue that has been taking place, there is a one-dimensional perception of our community. ask people in need who will not budge from one area of need to one of excellence. And that is incorrect. Corporations in Minnesota have carried out this paradigm shift from pre-globalization to post-globalization and have learned how to tap the untapped resources of Latino executives who are now presidents of companies within Cargill, executive vice presidents of 3M, and many other corporations. So what I'm suggesting to you is that after this is over, that we sit down and discuss how you can tap into that potential in the overall community. I think it's important to remember that our community is now the largest minority in the country, and it represented over 50% of the national growth of the population. So to have our fate be determined by this one-dimensional perception, which will then become a self-fulfilling prophecy, is not attractive neither to us nor to anybody else. So hopefully you will allow us some time afterwards to discuss this in greater detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Mr. Garcia, I just have a question for you. When I took a look at the expenditures out of the general fund, okay, this is money from the general fund that goes directly to the Chicano Latino Affairs Council. And so in the last fiscal year, 10-11, that was about $562,000 that it shows here on the spreadsheet. Does that agree with
for the biennium?
Pardon? For the biennium of 10-11.
Uh-huh.
That there's an appropriation in 10 of $271,000 and in 11, $291,000. Does that square with your numbers?
That sounds approximately correct.
And how many employees do you have then in the Chicano Latino Affairs?
We currently have 5 employees.
5 employees, plus yourself?
No, including myself.
Including yourself, so 4 besides yourself?
Yep.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Perry.
Thank you. You neglected to say, I believe they also received $250,000 from legacy dollars on top of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, for the years, there's different years. There's some grant money here, but legacy from the Humanities Center was $17,000 is what I have down here. So was there other money that you received through legacy funds in addition to this $25,000. Did you get legacy funds?
We are about to be given a grant once we signed a contract in May.
This year in May?
This year in May for a project dedicated to reduce the achievement gap in education. And it'll be of about $111,000. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mr. Garcia, I think that, as you can see, the legislature has already looked very kindly upon the work that you are doing, I think there. But I think because the time being late, I would rather just have our next testifier.
Sure, of course.
Yes, Representative Pepin.
Why are we taking testimony again on the Sunset Committee?
Representative Pepin, because they asked.
Okay. But
we will limit our time here. And for the record, sorry to interrupt, but your name and title.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eileen Herr, and I'm the chair, the Executive Director for the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans. And thank you for this opportunity for allowing us to speak, and thank you, Hector, for allowing me to come in with you as we are under the same article and testifying to sort of the same issue. I, first of all, want to thank the work of the commission. I think for the last 6 months that you have entered into this work, we've been at the table, we've been at the hearings, we've been in the discussion, and I found you to be open, very kind, and very smart in the way you approached your work. My understanding and my perception was that from your position, the councils served a state purpose in that we were the voice of state to the community and bringing it back in the areas of advisory to members of the House and the Senate and the governor and his cabinet. So as the Sunset Bill progressed through the House and through the Senate, I was pleased with the language and where things were going. And so it was really surprising to me to see that we were originally moved from the 2024 date to 2014. That took me by surprise in that did we in some way fail to perform in our Sunset Review? Is this a punishment? And are we allowed reasonable expectation in terms of a cycle of review in that there is a Sunset Review process and there are categories and we were placed in one category and now we are moved out of that category into 2014 to be reviewed again, which I don't mind. But again, like I said, it took me surprise because I thought there was a system and a process and a procedure. And I, as one, was willing and am willing to do whatever is at the will of the legislature. And we are happy to be considered and we are happy to be in the mix and to serve a state purpose. So that is my question, and I did not want to be silent on this issue. I wanted to bring my concern to you so that you'd say they had a voice and they spoke what was on their mind. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Herr. And as you know, in the legislature, we are when you are a created by the legislature, the legislature also does have a voice in that, but our heart means well for you. We've heard many times that the councils of color have questions and concerns and other things, so I think our hope and desire is to that this may be a helpful process, less than not so. One of the things, and in regard, Ms. Herr, and to Mr. Garcia, are the members of your council appointed by the legislature?
Madam Chair, and Hector can speak to his council, but my council are appointed by the governor through the appointment process via the Secretary of State.
Okay. Mr. Garcia?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's the same for us. 11 members are appointed by the governor, and then the Senate and the House appoint 2 non-voting members each.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your coming, and I know that in that particular case, I think all of them, but I appreciate your taking the time to be here, and I wanted to afford you that chance, and thank you very much for being here, Ms. Herr and Mr. Garcia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay, members, was there anybody else that wanted to testify tonight? All right, seeing none, we have a drafted amendment in front of you. And Mr. Shepherd, you want to just give me the status of the actual redoing of the conference committee report? How much time would you need to have something new prepared?
Madam Chair, the conference report is prepared in the revisor's office. And mm-hmm. because I don't think they are probably doing a lot of other things at the moment, it probably could be done in an hour. Staff for I don't think anybody from the revisor is here
but to argue with us. They're probably busy.
Okay. They estimate an hour after we give them the final language.
Okay. I think that the actual dates of the sunsets are before us, and then I think the other part is the combative sports language. And Mr. Shepherd, you've got that. And members, We do have language in front of us that we could adopt. and then read the draft language from Mr. Shepard when he comes back. At least that way we will have taken care of one part of it.
What are we looking at, Madam Chair?
Which document? Front of you the old, the language we are working off right now, the Senate language, because that's what was changed. And so we're working off the Senate language. And the one on top that has a date, the MSA-13, that is the proposed language for tonight. And the UEH, unofficial engrossment of House File 2555-1, is the language that came from the Senate. All right? So if you look at the dash one, Article 1, Sunset Review, that is the language as it came from the Senate. The A-13 is a draft amendment. And members, if you take a look at the chart, Mr. Shepard, would you like to get that language up to the revisor's office? Or do you want to wait until we finish this?
Madam Chair, if you think that you will be making a decision on this Article 1 relatively soon, it would be best to give them everything at once.
Okay. All right. We'll do that then. There was a chart, Senator Perry, that also I asked staff to put together. And what that did is summarize the date changes for you, because it's a little bit harder to see. Yep, right. This is, Senator Perry, it would look like this, work schedule, a table. That is a summary of the changes from the Senate language. And just to call your attention, the only difference from the Senate language is instead of 2013 for the Councils of Color, it is 2014. And we took the Amateur Sports Commission, the Capital Architecture, and the Council on Disabilities, and put them in 2018. And you and I had discussed handling it this way. So this is my following through and what I had talked with you about. But that table, it shows it a little bit easier than in. And the staff said if we just redid Article 1 as an amendment instead of an amendment that would change Article 1, this makes it more clear for staff by having a complete new Article 1, even though the only changes are 13 to 14 and the grouping in 18. Senator Bonhoff, members, have you had enough time to look at this? Can we entertain a motion to adopt this language, Senator Perry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as we discussed, the actual sunset date was June of 2013, correct?
That was where it came from in the Senate, yes.
Right. And that's the way it was set up. And in the Senate, we extended that 1 year. Sunset date by 1 year?
Actually not. The Senate was 2013, and this proposal is 2014, though you did discuss on the Senate floor by Senator Bonhoff to go to 2014. That was not accepted.
Right.
And you stuck with the
2013.
But the House feels, you have to remember that for the House we had 2024. And so we're coming down to 2014 instead of 2013. I think we've more than matched you.
Well, I understand that, but it won't happen at 2014. Madam Chair, it needs to stay at 2013.
The one thing you run into with 2013 would be reviewing them at the end of this year for the next legislative session. Either way, Senator Perry, it's going to go into the next legislative session. The question is, especially on the Council on Black Minnesotans, there to have a Office of the Legislative Auditor do a financial review that would give them probably about 3 months' worth of financial review before the audit. Representative Pepin.
Senator Perry, I guess I'm just a little bit frustrated because this is something that I've been interested in for a long time. I know Representative Banyan was too, and the commission is so difficult because there's so many considerations to take to keep in mind, and I feel like for this commission to be successful, which I really want it to be, and I'm happy that we're able to get an appropriation and get some staff because of the fine work the staff has done here, and you know, extra on top of what they all do, and I'm very happy to go forward, but it's in some ways kind of a volatile issue, and we spent many hours on the Sunset Commission looking at this stuff. I don't necessarily agree with everything, but it was just a little surprising that after we pre-conferred this, that these amendments came in the floor from someone who's on the Sunset Commission, and it just seems like if we're going to make progress on the commission as a whole and really have the legislature buy into this, at some point we have to, along the way, get the work done instead of having changes at the last minute on the floor of the Senate. And I mean no disrespect, but I think that if that's the way we conduct it, it's going to result in blowing up the Sunset Commission. And I know all the work that you want to see done here and that I want to see done. I personally think that we have, you know, far too much government and probably you know, too many boards and commissions and really no way to roll those back. But I feel like if we don't use some caution with going forward at a steady pace, it's going to really make it hard to have the commission have credibility going forward. So, you know, having said that, I think that the compromise language is, you know, a pretty good compromise considering where we came from. So I guess I would move the compromise language.
Okay, we have a motion. The A13, then, is that?
That was the new draft language.
Okay, more discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, I think I've made my stance perfectly clear. And, you know, it goes back to, first and foremost, do we have advisory councils or have we created mini agencies? And that's virtually what this legislature has done over the years, has taken advisory councils and turned them into mini agencies and started funding them as such. As an advisory council, if you meet twice a year, that's an advisory council, and report back to the governor and the legislature. Where we have issues is that it's time that folks quit asking the government to do for them what they probably should be doing for themselves. And I've talked to these councils, and they say the reason they wanted an advisory council is because they didn't feel they were being represented. Well, most of them have two House members and a senator. And, you know, when people start coming to me and saying, well, then maybe we should have an advisory council or a commission for the men of Minnesota. And maybe we should have one for the women of Minnesota. And maybe we should have one for the Catholics of Minnesota and the Lutherans of Minnesota.
Don't forget the Germans.
Huh? And the Germans and the Norwegians, and it goes on and on and on and on. And I go back to, over the years, looking at identical rubber-stamped reports by this legislature. And now all of a sudden when they're brought to accountability, some can't even articulate what it is they are supposed to do. And I contend that by holding their feet to the fire, that they have a year or a little better to get their ducks in a row and come back to the next legislature and plead their case well better than I think they pled in front of the Sunset Commission. And I'm desperately concerned about the amount of money that is being appropriated to these commissions. And we can go into the accountability. I've already made my statement there. And this is a way to start the ball rolling. And I know it's tough. It's an election year. And I know people are going to think that we're picking on some of the councils. But it's about accountability. It's about doing the right thing. And I believe the right thing is
They have until 2013. They'll have another legislative session. They'll have all the interim to talk with the committees with the authority. They'll have all this next 6, 7, 8 months to get together and come back and plead their case on whether or not the next legislature thinks that they should stay in existence.
Thank you, Senator Perry. Senator Bonoff?
Madam Chair, I would echo the comments of Representative Pepin. The Sunset Commission was passed into law and was viewed very skeptically by many of my colleagues. And after the work of the Sunset Commission, that changed because we demonstrated very, very diligent hard work, and we came to a consensus. And so there was an expectation on behalf of my colleagues that the commission, which we had all agreed to, would have been respected, that the report would have been respected. We were quite surprised by the amendment on the floor. Senator Perry, I continued to negotiate in good faith and am here to do that. I can tell you that since then I've been told by many in my caucus that it's time to repeal the Sunset Commission. Now, they don't have the authority to do that, but it is such a turnaround from where it was just 1 week ago when the conversations among us were very positive. I think the change from where we left it to the abrupt change on the Senate floor, particularly by you, given you were part of that commission, and it was a surprise, has left a bad taste in people's mouths. So I would urge you to accept the House compromise, which I am accepting, given, you know, the original agreement was so much farther out. I think it actually, you know, for me to be willing to sign a conference report that changes so dramatically from what we agreed to and make that kind of movement that you wouldn't move 1 year in response, I think puts our health licensing boards and everybody else at grave risk. And I think that is not responsible either.
Okay, having had discussion, we'll proceed to a vote on the A13 amendment. Do we need a, we just can do a voice roll, right? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion prevails and is adopted, and the A13 amendment is adopted. The other part is on the Combative Sports Commission language change. I think it's a little bit difficult without having actual language in front of us, but I would suppose at this time we've agreed in concept. We just need actual language. Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, I've written it, but my handwriting is extremely bad, so I don't think photocopying it would be of benefit, but I can read it onto the tape, and then, of course, you'll all have the opportunity to read it when you sign it.
At least give us a better idea. Thank you.
As the conferees indicated earlier, on, and I'm referring to the Senate unofficial engrossment because that is the complete document where it refers on page 21, line 3 to section 15.039, subdivisions 1 to 7. That would instead be subdivisions 1 to 6, so the employees would not automatically transfer. There would then in that section be added after the period three new sentences that would read, the Commissioner of Labor and Industry may provide that one or more staff of the Combative Sports Commission transfer to the Department of Labor and Industry. The second sentence would read, no money from the general fund may be used for costs associated with the transfer functions in this article. And the final section dealing with indirect costs would read that the Commissioner of Labor and Industry may charge the combative sports account for indirect costs incurred in other accounts or funds for costs associated with transfer of combative sports functions.
Does that capture, Senator Perry, your... Okay, I think it does for me as well.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that amendment.
All right. We have a motion on that amendment. Any more discussion? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and is adopted. All right. With that, that is the all the work that is on the agenda. We can end the conference committee, and then it's a matter of preparing the actual report. And members, I'd really appreciate it. We need to post it. So we need your signatures as much as possible to post. And it sounds like an hour from now would be about 10 to 10 or so, if you would convene back in this room, and then we'll... Okay, Senator Daley.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I just want to make just a couple of comments and observations throughout this whole process, not about the details of the legislation that we've been talking about up to this point, but to talk about the mission of each of the organizations, that they that the leaders of these organizations, the executive directors, know what their mission is. And it ties into a conversation that I had with the Office of the Legislative Auditor with Mr. Nobles. And a lot of the organizations don't know what their mission is. They don't know what the outcomes are supposed to be. And it's really surprising that they don't know what the goals and objectives are, that they're not measured, there aren't metrics. And as I look on the first page here, we're changing from a priority-based budget to an outcome-based budget. Do they know what that is? Because we saw them come in with all these priority-based budgets, and every single one of them was different. There wasn't a standard. They didn't know how to prepare it. Are we having that conversation with all of these commissions and boards? Are we articulating, are we sharing with them what our expectations are for this outcome-based budget? Is there a template? Do they know what our expectations are with that? I mean, I know I'm asking a lot of questions. I would just hope that we can work with them in some form, format, fashion to make sure that it's clear to each of them what our expectations are and that there's a uniform or fairly uniform result when they do prepare these budgets so they know what our expectations are and the outcomes that we're looking for are being achieved, that they know what the goals and objectives are and they're moving in that direction. I don't know what else to say except that we want them to be successful, and we want them to know what success looks like in these various forms and fashions.
Yep, I think very much so, and I would say in my closing remarks as well that the outcome-based budget does, Senator, it does go into a little bit more detail exactly how to do that. But I do think that when the state uses $600,000 of general fund money and you have five employees, I think it is incumbent upon them, and since they are appointees of the governor, to figure that out. That is their duty to do that and to have conversations with the governor's office or with other staff. And just to let you know, too, that in this bill, we also are including them in with the Department of Administration's SMART program. And so there's in the rest of this bill, there are some substantial changes to their conduct. But I think that due to some of these things, there was the fact that this 2 years can be very helpful to them to maybe help set them on the course a little bit better rather than going for another 12 years, and then you have no attention whatsoever. So I think that is why many of us did. But having done that, I think our work here at this time, anybody else? Conference committee is then, we are adjourned, correct? All right. Recessed. We are in recess.